Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McKinnon and Phil Bush here with you again. Phil, we got a lot to talk about today.
It's an action-packed. Buckle up. We're going to have a long podcast today.
Yeah, we are. This is for Monday, October 24th. We got a lot of stuff to go through. We were going to get to some recruiting stuff later. We're going to talk jerseys, talk Big East predictions. But the first thing we're going to talk about in the show today, Phil, is something you had access to, being a season ticket holder.
Correct.
And that was a look at the Marquette team as they had an open practice for season ticket holders. Going to kind of take basically what we saw from that and from Marquette Madness and kind of start the show here with some early impressions from the team. First, Phil, just tell me a little bit about that open practice and what it was like as a season ticket holder to kind of have that experience.
Yeah, so this was the first year they've done it, obviously, and it was I have to say I was pretty impressed by the whole thing. So basically, it was a Friday evening at 6 down at the Bradley Center. Show up, and there was free popcorn. You could buy beer, food to purchase, and then you got basically...
You had me at beer.
What's that?
You had me at beer.
Right, correct. It was expensive beer, so there was a few pre-drinks that were taken off camp or off of the stadium. But anyway, it was and then we were right in the lower bowl, right along the sideline of the Bradley Center court. And the team was essentially running through some drills. It was a little, I'm sure it was a little bit of a dog and pony show, and they saved some of the colorful language that I'm sure they have behind closed doors for when someone screws up, because there wasn't any of that.
Right, yeah. No need to tear somebody a new one in front of the season ticket.
Correct. There's at least 300 8-year-olds or younger there that don't need to know what the F-bomb is and how many different ways you can use it. But yeah, they ran through some drills, and Wojo was working the mic like a professional wrestler, letting everyone know what the drills were, what the point of them was, kind of what they were looking for. It was kind of one of the first 2 years, not even talking about the players, but just around Wojo. The first 2 years, Wojo, I felt, was very much about coach speak and just, didn't really let you in as a fan to where his head was at. And I don't know if it was this event or generally, I feel like his press conferences have been a little bit more open, a little more emotive. I thought he was pretty forthcoming, when he was telling folks what was going on and what the intentions were for the coaching staff and how the style of play they wanted to play this year. So I thought it was a very insightful kind of opportunity to not only see the players play, but kind of get a little bit of visibility to what the coaching staff was thinking.
Yeah, you got to see a few other things. I mean, we had Marquette Madness. We got to see a 3-point shootout and a slam dunk contest. We talk about a dog and pony show. I mean, that's just for fun, that, really. I don't know if you can take much out of that. But I know the thing that was interesting to me, Phil, was they did a 5-on-5 scrimmage, and I was wondering if one of those 5-on-5 teams is the potential starting lineup.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. You and I may have been texting during the event, and what was interesting, and Wojo actually at one point did say, "Oh, we run a lot of combinations. Don't read into any one of these combinations."
But we're going to read into them.
But I say that to then spend the next 15 minutes reading into everything that happened. But the first team that was put together for 5-on-5, one team was Tracy Hanif, Juwan Johnson, Sam Hauser, and Luke Fisher. And they played against Rousey, Dwayne, Sandy, Caton, and Matt Helt. That first set, to me, looked... maybe with the Sam Hauser being a little bit of the exception, that first group looked maybe like the starting five when the season starts.
It sounds to me like a starting five. I think if you're kind of make a guess on Marquette's starting five for this year, the locks certainly would be Luke and Hanif Cheatham, and I would say probably Juwan Johnson, and I would, even though some may disagree, I would say probably Tracy Carter. Is a lock to start at the point. I mean, some people may want to make a case for Rousey or the freshman Howard, who's exciting, but I feel pretty confident saying that Carter is a starter. The interesting one, of course, is who's going to fill in that spot at the four. If Marquette's going to be playing four guards, like I think almost everyone on the roster is listed as a guard except for Luke and Helt.
Yep.
So is Hauser going to is could he be a guy who could potentially start as a freshman, even if he doesn't see a ton of minutes? It's interesting because Wojo said in his season opening press conference that he does expect a lot out of Sam Hauser this year.
You know, I will say Hauser looked – he looked like a mini Steve Novak with the way he was shooting. Small sample size, this is where we're on our jump to conclusions, Matt. So everyone just hang on.
That's what podcasts are for.
Yeah, exactly. He was shooting the three really well. He looks like the closest to a legitimate four that we have on the roster just from a size and body type standpoint. He played really well in the 5-on-5, especially. I just don't know, especially as a true freshman, I just don't know that you can count on him to defend and rebound in the Big East for any amount of substantial minutes. Like, I think he's going to get run. I think he's going to get to play, and he's going to get to contribute. I just right. don't know that we can – and he may even, you know, start, but I think it's going to be more closer to a start like Eric Williams getting a couple of minutes at the beginning of a game before, you know, giving way to Jay Crowder than it is going to be him starting and playing 30 minutes a game. I think he'll contribute. I just don't think he's going to be able to withstand the overall season and contribute in significant minutes.
Always great when you can sneak an Eric Williams reference into the show, but I tend to agree with you. I just can't put too much emphasis on a true freshman unless it's a true freshman like Henry Ellenson that is projected to be a lottery pick. Hauser is, we are hoping, is going to be very good, but let's not get too crazy about it and start comparing him to a guy like Henry Ellenson. But I think he'll be a very good player, but I think you make some good points, and without seeing too much of Hauser myself, I tend to agree with that he could be a guy who could start but could give way to veteran players as the games go along, like Caton Reinhardt. He is a guy who I think is going to play a lot this year just because of his ability to shoot the ball. And really, the interesting thing I want to hear from you on this, Phil, because you got to see them scrimmage and getting to see a little bit of Marquette madness as well. It's going to be a different style, obviously, with this team this year. And so I think that's something to be optimistic about, even if you want to say, well, last year's team did not make any postseason tournament. They lost a lottery pick. How could they be that much better? But if they're playing a completely different style that caters to the talent they have, which is much better shooters this year, Reinhardt might be the best shooter on the team. Hauser looks like he could be a really good shooter. Rousey should be a very good shooter. And none of those guys played at all for Marquette last year. Howard looks like he could be a nice shooter off the bench. So, you know, with regards to the new style, again, they probably weren't exactly playing Big East pace in this little scrimmage here. But, you know, what can you say about the style that they're going to be playing this year as compared to what we've seen in the first couple of years with Wojo?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and I think that was probably the most revealing of that practice, at least for me, is certainly on defense, it looks like they're going to play a much more up-tempo defense or a much more, I would say, close to a full-court defense. I would expect Marquette to be playing some sort of, at a minimum, three-quarter court defense in the non-conference and certainly part of Big East. I think the idea is, well, we've got enough interchangeable pieces that we can run a lot of bodies at them. Wojo even said something about he's not expecting players to get more than 30 minutes of pop because he's going to be asking a lot of them. So which kind of stood out and saying, well, okay, because last year there was, you know, Henry and Luke when Luke wasn't in foul trouble and Juwan Johnson towards the end of the season, those guys were getting 30, 34 minutes. So it's definitely the departure. I think it looked like from a defensive end, like I said, it was going to be kind of more full court, three quarter court. They look to be crashing the boards as a team, whereas last year you kind of saw the guards start to run out, assuming Luke and Henry could collect the rebounds. So the guards were crashing down on the boards as well, which I think is a change. So it's going to be much more of a team rebounding orientation. And then lastly, they are going to shoot. I don't know that they're going to dribble up and pull up and shoot, but I think they're going to be looking to get three-point shots on ball reversals and on penetration and kicks. I think that's going to be a major portion of the effort for the team on offense is they're going to maybe you know, try and get a paint touch either on a post pass or a drive, and then look to kick to the opposite side for a three if it's there. And while some players struggled, like Rousey and Caton, some players like Hauser and Dwayne were really on from three. So it'll be interesting. They're not, none of them are afraid to shoot. They were all shooting at a significant clip. So it'll be very much on offense, a 3-point oriented offense. What'll be interesting to see is how fast they go.
Right. And how accurately they shoot and how many, you know, how many they make, because obviously that could play a lot into your KenPom rankings and your numbers and your efficiency. If you're going down and getting those bonus points for making 3-point shots, you're getting more out of each possession. So if you have a lot of guys who can shoot an above average percentage from three, then you're going to be a more efficient team, and the numbers say you're going to win more games if you do that. So I'm excited to see exactly how good this team shoots in game action. You know, we can see practice video of them draining threes all day. I want to see them do it with, you know, hands in their faces and going up against Big East defenses, how many they're going to make. But I'm cautiously optimistic that just the style of play is going to get the most out of this roster and let these guys just shoot, and hopefully that opens up a lot for Luke Fisher down low. I still have concerns about rebounding. I still have concerns about rim protection, because I'm not sure Marquette really has a shot blocker on the team. But hopefully the 3-point percentage is going to make up for some of those flaws, and, you know, out the efficiency that way.
Yeah, well, the other thing that was interesting on the defensive end, you mentioned the rim protector. They were doing a lot of ball pressure on defense, so trying to extend the defense out further, and to a certain extent deny the entry pass into the post. So I think what we're going to see a lot of, and it'll be interesting depending on matchups, but I think what the philosophy is going to be is try and speed teams up to make mistakes, you know, before they get into their offense. And then once they do get into their offense, put a lot of ball pressure on to try and deny the post entry, where we may struggle from time to time with a lot of help should penetration occur. I don't think, you know, the first 2 years we saw a lot of 2-3 zone. I would not expect that we will see much, if any, 2-3 zone out of this team this season. It just,
yeah, 'cause Wojo always kind of went to a zone as a last resort,
right?
I mean, especially in his first year when he would, you know, he only had 8 bodies on the team, right? Only 8 guys he could play who were on
and,
the scholarship.
And sometimes he was like 6 or 7 when Carlino had a concussion or somebody was injured.
Yeah, guys get injured, and then also last year when Fisher would be in foul trouble and Matt Helt was hurt, and, you know, just to kind of protect them, he would go to the zone as well. Wojo, even though he maybe hasn't necessarily said it in these words, I think it's safe to say he doesn't really like playing zone.
It doesn't seem like it, no.
Yeah, a lot of college basketball coaches are like that. They just don't like playing zone. They would much rather play an aggressive man-to-man and use the athleticism and defend that way. Feel like you have much more control over the defense if you have a man-to-man in which everyone knows his assignment and sticks to it. So, yeah, I think Wojo has always wanted to play a very aggressive, fast-paced, maybe even, like I said, three-quarter court man-to-man, but just the personnel has not really allowed him to do that as much in his first 2 seasons as the head coach. Now that he's got 12 scholarship players, none of whom are redshirt candidates, I mean, they're all going to play at least some. And so I think you have plenty of bodies to keep rotating out there and just throw a lot of guys out there. If so, the team should never get too exhausted, right? So there should be enough guys that, you know, you can, if a guy gets a little tired, there's another guy waiting to sub in, and you should never really be too exhausted if you want to play, I wouldn't say full court press the whole game, but if you want to do a lot of three-quarter court and play man-to-man, and I think there's enough athleticism on the wing to play man-to-man. So hopefully that will allow Wojo to play the type of defense he wants to play. And this team, in his third year, is hopefully the team is close to his ideal team, right? Because the first year was obviously just a big adjustment. I'll just take anybody I can.
He only had 8 scholarship players.
Right. And, you know, last year was interesting because you bring in the lottery pick and you kind of had to cater to him. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
And a lot of youth.
And a ton of youth. And they were so young last year. And so we'll see how that translates into this year and see how they can finish up in the Big East.
Well, what will be interesting is, like I said, I think they're looking to speed other teams up, maybe not in total time, but just in how quickly they have to move and react. They're looking to speed people up on the defensive end, but I do think they're looking to slow things down on the offensive end. I don't, you know, they did some practice that involved some secondary breaks and those sorts of things, but I that was more about actually letting the defense, you know, putting pressure on the defense to get them to get back. I don't think it, in fact, Wojo mentioned that the drill was so that the defense was at a disadvantage so that they had to kind of figure it out. So the drill was more for the defense than the offense. I think they're going to be looking to slow, at least this makes sense in my mind, they're going to be looking to slow down a little bit on offense, especially given their turnover troubles last season. So if they can create more possessions on the defensive end while not risking offensive possessions or protecting offensive possessions in the form of not turning the ball over, that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, their efficiency and their turnover percentage, they may have more turnovers, but they, you know, as a pure number, but their turnover percentage in theory should go down.
I am cautiously optimistic that the turnover numbers will go down, mainly because they have a little bit more depth at the point guard spot this year. And not that the high turnover numbers were all his fault, but Hanif Cheatham did turn the ball over a lot last year because he was forced to play point guard a lot more than he should, and this year he probably won't play it at all.
Unless something's gone wrong, he should not be playing point at all.
Right, because Tracy Carter is the starter, I would presume, and then Rousey's backing him up, and then you've got Marcus Howard as well, who is going to be competing for minutes, one would think. And I think even fourth on the point guard depth chart would be Dwayne Wilson. So I think you go five deep before you consider Hanif Cheatham as your point guard.
Right. Yep, absolutely.
So, again, not that the turnovers were all on him. Tracy Carter had plenty of turnovers last year, but he was a true freshman. Henry Ellenson, as great as he was, he had turnover issues as well. So as many ball handlers as Marquette has this year, and especially the depth at the point guard spot, I'm cautiously optimistic that the turnover percentage will take a dip this year. And again, that's another thing that plays into efficiency and to the KenPom numbers. So that, if that number goes down, the three-point percentage goes up. Hopefully that makes up for what I would anticipate would be disappointing rebounding numbers compared to last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that's key, you mentioned, you know, Tracy was a freshman last year. Obviously, he's going to be a sophomore this year. So the players that played on the team last year are more experienced. But even, you know, any player, you know, Henry's gone from last year's team, but we brought in two players, if you will, in the form of Rousey and Kate and Reinhardt that are experienced. They have Division I playing time under their belt. So it's not like we're trading, you know, an inexperienced freshman for an inexperienced freshman. We're getting some veteran experience who now in the scrimmage, they were probably the two poorest shooters, but I don't know that really means anything. Again, small sample size, and I guess they said that was their fourth practice in 2 days because the students are on fall break. So by all means, just run the basketball team into the ground on break. They don't have anything better to do. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see, like you said, the rebounding is definitely going to be a concern. Can you make up with that by turning the ball over less and turning other teams over?
Yeah, you hope so. And I love the experience point you made because Andrew Rousey is now the leading scorer career-wise on the team. He has more points than anyone else. And I would guess Reinhardt would be probably right behind him. Dwayne Wilson's up there too. But, Reinhardt and Rousey have a ton of career points in college basketball compared to the rest of the roster. So, yeah, like you said, you have definitely added some experience there. And again, hopefully with experience comes smarter play, fewer turnovers.
Right, and Wojo said it at the practice and has said it in interviews, so you have to think he means it. The other thing he has said is he wants to go 10 deep. Now, most coaches go 8-9 deep, so I think that also lends itself to they're going to play faster, they're going to play aggressive. You know, if there's a little bit of foul trouble or if players are getting tired, he's not going to – we may be back to the days of the line changes of Buzz Williams a little bit where we're running 3-4 players in at a given time. during the season. So it seems to, which for me, I personally, I think that's exciting basketball. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe it'll be a little bit of, shock of smart, 40 minutes of havoc kind of ball. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, interested to see. You know, we're going to get to the Big East predictions here in just a minute. But one other thing I want to touch on from Madness and the open practice, something that's been having the social media world buzzing in the Marquette community, and that's the new jerseys. We finally got a look at them. At least we've seen two of the four fully previewed, and we've seen three, and we've seen a sneak of the third one. We saw, did they at the practice, did they debut the entire gold jersey, or they just show like just a, they just hold up a jersey?
They held up the jersey. They didn't have the shorts.
The shorts, right. Okay. So we've seen the full blue and white versions of the jerseys. I'm sure you've all seen them by now. I like to call it a history book of a jersey because it takes so many different parts of Marquette history and has just kind of incorporated it into one. Again, I'm sure many of you have read by now and see what it all means, but they've incorporated the Bumblebee jersey. They've incorporated the 77 style with the Marquette below the numbers. They have what looks like a belt around the waist. It's not a belt, but it looks, you know, players wore belts back in, what, the 30s? And so that's what that's supposed to look like with the little buckle in the front. And see what else they have. You know, the Al, which was incorporated after Al McGuire passed, that was 2002, roughly, 2001, 2002. And so there's a lot of Marquette history in these jerseys. What do you think of them, Phil?
I think you and I have differing opinions. I like them a lot. I think there's minor tweaks here and there. I would say it, maybe people will get angry at me. I think the American flag needs to be removed simply because it just clutters up the uniform far too much because there's already about 37 other logos on there.
You unpatriotic.
I know. We all know how anti-American I am. But overall, I think they're great because I think they and I also one of the things I would caution people that are maybe such as yourself that are a little less loving of them is I think they're a one-time jersey. I don't think we wear them again after this season.
Yeah, I think it is just a one-year thing. And what you were saying about how we differ, like when I saw them, I wasn't blown away like, wow, best jerseys in college basketball, which some people seem to believe. And they're entitled to their opinions. I'm just not wowed by the style. I love the history behind them, and I think that's what makes them cool. That you know, but I think you have to explain to some people outside the program, this is why this jersey is awesome. This is what this represents. That's what you know. That's why the name is down here like this. That's what these stripes are about. So the history makes them cool. Do I think they're like really stylish? Do I want to wear one? I'm not sure, but I just because I think it is a great way to celebrate 100 years of Marquette basketball because, like I said, it's a history book that you're wearing. You have different pieces of all the Marquette eras kind of patched together in this thing. So I think that makes it cool. Is it the most stylish jersey I've ever seen? No. But can I deal with it for a year? Absolutely. I think it's a cool way to celebrate 100 years of Marquette basketball.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think the way I look at it is I think the history is like you had to do the history and let's be honest. Some of the Marquette uniforms are now banned. The Untucked and the Bumblebee are both both banned uniforms.
But that's the thing. I appreciate the subtle nod to the Bumblebee because there are stripes that are very faint on the blue jersey. And I think on the white jersey, I couldn't make it out on the yellow.
I don't know on the body. Obviously you got the side panels. That
right. But
stripes.
Like on the body though, on the blue jerseys, there are very, very faint horizontal stripes that are a nod to the Bumblebee jerseys. So again, that's something that I think is very cool historically. Stylish, up for debate.
I think it's cool
historically.
Yeah, I will say that I get the point about the stylish. I don't know that you could have been more stylish. I suppose if I'm being super critical because we know what a fashion person I am.
We are, yes.
I would say that they almost at times seem to try and throw everything in the jersey. You know what I mean? Like they tried to honor like 17 different jersey styles. In,
right.
You know, and if they had instead said, okay, we're going to, you know, in the blues, we're going to honor X, Y, and Z.
That's what I would have loved. See, that's what I would have loved. Make the blue the Bumblebee jersey. Make the white the 77 jersey. And make, you know, and There's a couple of like the jerseys in the early 70s that George Thompson wore that was a white jersey that had the blue and white stripe, only a vertical stripe only down the right side with the number, like that would have been make that the white jersey, right? And maybe make the gold jersey the 77 style. Again, nitpicking, I love them historically. I'm not complaining saying they should get rid of them. For 1 year, I think they're going to be fun to wear. People are going to talk about them. I'll be curious when people outside the program who are maybe broadcasting a game, like when it's on Fox Sports 1 or CBS Sports Network or the rare occasion where we might be on an ESPN network, what they're going to say about the jerseys. People outside the program, are they going to say, these things are so amazing? Or they say, well, that's interesting. Look at that.
Well,
so,
I guess I would ask you as a sports producer, I mean, the thing that comes to mind that whether they intended it or not, that the jerseys will, you know, because you have that history level and it's a talk, you know, there's only so many things you can talk about during a game. I do suspect that we're going to see a lot of packages kind of, you know, during games showing the old uniforms and the old pictures.
Right, yeah, during the games. And then when they're on a highlight show, that'll probably be like the first shot. Say, check out what Marquette wore tonight against Wisconsin or whoever. So right. I think there'll always be a talking point. So gets people talking about the program. People will tune in and say, what is Marquette wearing? What is that all about?
And talking about the history of the program and making it fresh for them and stuff like right. that.
And people who don't know the program much say, wow, Marquette's been playing basketball for 100 years. Well, what have they done in that 100 years? Maybe I should learn more about this program. So,
yeah, exactly.
Talking points, good things for social media. I'm anxious to see the championship blue. That's the only thing we haven't seen. So I wonder if the lettering will be gold, or I would hope it would be, but maybe it'll be, I don't know if it'll be white, or maybe if they'll mix it up. Because one thing none of the jerseys have is any kind of outline around the numbering, right? That numbering and lettering is only one color. Like on the white jerseys, it's just a solid blue that almost looks black. And then on the blue jerseys, it's just a solid white. So I'll be curious to see if they shake it up at all, but I think it's probably going to be very much the same as all the others. I'm going to guess it's going to be gold lettering and numbering on the championship blue, as they have called it. So I think that will look pretty cool. I'm excited to see that last one. Hopefully they'll wear those in the opener against Vanderbilt.
Well, I believe there's actually you've got the championship blue, and I thought I saw something about there's another jersey beyond that even.
Yeah, it's
the Owls Night?
Jordan brand. Yeah, the Jordan brand celebrates Native American Heritage Month in late November, I think. And so it's just going to be a one-time jersey. I think it's going to be like a turquoise color. So it's not going to be like a Marquette color necessarily. It's just going to be several Jordan brand schools are going to be wearing that color that night.
That's okay, so it's not Marquette specific. It's Marquette partaking in a...
Yeah, Marquette will be partaking in a national promotion by Jordan brand that night. It's one of the bye games. I forget which one, but I think it's in late November, I want to say.
I'm guessing Willy Wampum will not make an appearance on that jersey.
Oh, God, please don't bring that up.
There are people firebombing their computers as they're listening to this.
Yeah, that logo will never come back. Hey, let's shift gears now and talk Big East predictions. The Big East preseason poll came out. That, of course, comes along with Big East Media Day, which happened a couple weeks ago. Predicted order of finish in the Big East. No surprise, Villanova was a unanimous pick to finish first. They're getting 9 of 10 first-place votes. You can't vote for yourself, so obviously everyone besides Villanova voted for Villanova. Xavier got the only other first place vote, so of course that came from Jay Wright voting for Xavier. Creighton 3, Georgetown, Seton Hall tied at 4. Butler 6, Marquette comes in 7th, followed by St. John's, Providence, DePaul. 7 predicted finish for Marquette, Phil. Too high, too low, about right.
I think given what I'm going to give a very political answer. I think given what the pollsters or the aficionados and the media types that make up this poll, given what they saw last season and what they know of this season.
I believe this is the coaches' poll, though.
Oh, that's true. It is the coaches' poll.
Yep.
Okay. Right. But still.
But I would imagine a media poll would finish very similarly
right.
for the record.
Given that, I think they basically go, yeah, that seems reasonable. I think what... The way I kind of look at it is I think one, two, and maybe three are relatively – I'm relatively confident in that. 4 through 7, I'm confident in the group that's in 4 through 7. What order they finish in is the big question. Mm-hmm. And then 8 through 10, I'm pretty confident those crappy teams are.
Yeah, I think Providence takes a big step back, obviously losing Bentel, who, by the way, I was surprised to see did not make the Celtics, the team that picked him up. So he's, I guess, going to go to the D-League. But yeah, St. John's, Still building, still probably have a way to go. DePaul is DePaul. And with Marquette, with regards to Marquette, seventh in the Big East, I think is probably fair given their history. But I am optimistic that they can hopefully sneak a couple spots higher when the season gets going. I think you got to be getting in the mode of maybe finishing five-ish if you want to talk about making the tournament. I think Marquette, with regards to making the tournament, I like to phrase it this way. I think making the tournament is a goal, but not an expectation. Like, I would not call this team failures if they don't make the tournament, but I think it is realistic for them to be in that locker room right now and say, we can make the tournament.
Let me ask you, why would you say it's not an expectation to make the tournament? What justifies not making the tournament for this season?
I would say there are still teams in the Big East better than them. Probably at least three, possibly as many as five. So finishing six in the Big East might not be enough. I would say I have questions about rebounding with the team. And I would also say I am not sure that they have that star, like one really great player who is going to kind of carry them and maybe be the X factor that could get them into double-digit wins in the Big East. I think they're a good team. I just has because making the tournament is tough, especially coming out of the Big East, as we've seen. And I think finishing sixth or seventh in the Big East, granted there are plenty of good teams, but I don't think that's going to be enough to get you into the tournament. So I want to see them compete and like say some beat some teams near the top like Villanova and Xavier. And before I say I expect them to make the tournament. I am hopeful that they could make the tournament, but I'm still not sure they have a great team. Like enough, I guess they have some good promising players. I'm not convinced that they have a lot of good players that make up a very good tournament team, I guess is the way of putting it. Could they get there and maybe prove me wrong and exceed expectations? Perhaps. But to say that this is absolutely a tournament team, I just definitely stop short of saying that.
Yeah, I think the thing I look at it as is, if you look at last season versus this season, I think, my opinion, I know Henry's a big, a big factor, but I think the talent and the capabilities on this team this season are better than last season, right? And last season, they were, if they had beaten DePaul and Creighton at home, if they had won mm-hmm. both of those games, I think they would have...
And beaten Belmont.
A, they would have been in the tournament. B, they would have finished top five in the Big East. And so the way I look at it is Marquette has gotten better this season, or will be better this season than last overall. And while some teams have gotten better, like Creighton is going to definitely be better this year than last year. But Providence is going to be worse than they were last year. Now, admittedly, we beat Providence twice last year, but those are the weird things. But I don't see a case where Marquette does exact. I don't think the Big East has gotten better top to bottom, at least equivalent to what Marquette has gotten better. So if I'm looking at it as a math equation, I think Marquette has gotten better to a larger degree than the balance of the Big East has, so they should finish higher than where they did last year. And I think given the Big East generally being very good again this year, I think a top five finish, which I expect Marquette to have a top five finish in the Big East, I think that if you expect a top five finish in the Big East, you should also expect a NCAA tournament bid.
Sure, and I just stopped short of saying that they could definitely finish top five because Villanova, Xavier, both, I would say, pretty sure better than Marquette. Creighton, probably a little bit better. And then the question, I think there's a lot of optimism for Georgetown. I was messing around with a buddy at work who was a big Georgetown fan. He said, we're definitely going to tournament this year. I said, I mean, you guys are like the Texas of the Big East. Like every year in the preseason, you say you're great. And like the Texas football of the Big East. Like every year preseason, you guys are great. And then, I don't know. But there, for what it's worth, there is a lot of optimism around Georgetown. Seton Hall, tough loss with Isaiah Whitehead going to the pro, but they brought back just about everyone else. So they could conceivably still be better than Marquette. And I still know what we have in Butler. And so if I think there's a decent chance there could be five teams better than Marquette in the Big East. Now, the big math equation, you talk about math, Phil. The big equation everyone wants to know is no NIT last year minus the Ellensons plus Rousey, Howard, Hauser, Reinhardt, and everyone else a year older. Does that equate to 3 or 4 more wins overall and getting into the tournament? We're going to find out. But, you know, losing a lottery pick, let's not poo-poo that like it's nothing, because, I mean, he was a good player. And I think people who doubted his talent just were frustrated overall with the win-loss record of the team. Henry Ellenson was a great player.
Yeah.
Some people didn't appreciate him while he was there. So losing him and losing his rim protection and rebounding, especially, rebounding is the big one. We'll see if Marquette is able to make up for that and become a tournament team. I still think, like I said, I think it's a goal. I wouldn't say it's an expectation where if they don't make the tournament, I would say it's time to clean house. I think if they don't make the tournament, I would be bummed. But, you know, as long as they're not finishing 9th or 10th, I wouldn't call this team a failure. I would hope they're going to finish 7 or higher. I am hopeful that they can get up to that 5 range, but it's going to be difficult. It really is, because I think there are a lot of good teams in the Big East, and you kind of have to go on the road and beat some of these teams if you want to finish in the top 5.
Now, would you say, okay, if you're going to say NCAA is not an expectation, would you say a postseason bid in the form of NIT or NCAA should be an expectation?
Yeah, I will say that. I mean, let's at least make the NIT, right? Let's at least do something in March and have something to watch in March, because I think Marquette fans are a little exhausted of having to watch March every year. It's been 3 seasons now with no postseason at all. 2 of those under Wojo. And, you know, of course, the last season with Buzz was disappointing, and then the first year with Wojo was a transition year, and then last year was a bummer to not make the NIT. I think so many underdogs winning conference tournaments really screwed Marquette in the NIT picture. I think Marquette otherwise probably would have been in the NIT. And of course, you know, the schedule last year hurt Marquette as far as strength of schedule getting the NIT probably as well. But that's for last year, and the schedule's better this year. Hopefully they can win the games they're supposed to and, you know, maybe get a couple quality wins in the non-con, and we'll see if they can get 500-ish in the Big East and see, you know, kind of see where that lands them. But yeah, to answer your question, I would say yeah. I would say making the postseason of some type would be an expectation, and no, none of those Vegas 64 or whatever the heck it is.
The Vegas 8. No, I mean, no, we're not going to have it.
The Vegas whoever wants to come tournament.
Yeah.
So I would just say, yeah, making either the NIT or the NCAAs would be an expectation. NIT being, I would say, the minimum expectation, I would say, for this team.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I when I say expectations are the NCAA tournament, I think this team should be good enough to get there. Do I think Wojo should be fired if we don't get to that tournament? No. I think he's got another year or two at least, especially if he continues to recruit at the level he's at. But I would say, you know, I think, and maybe part of this is colored by my opinion on the Ellenson situation. I in no way doubt his talent. I think he's very talented. But I also think he was a talent that was slightly miscast for the way the team was coming together and the way Wojo wanted that team to come together. So that made year two more of a transition year than it otherwise might have been, right? I mean, they might not have, without Ellenson, last year could have been worse. But I think the team would have been closer to the incarnation of what they're going to be this year. So, I think on the defensive end and the rebounding is where they're really going to miss Ellenson. I actually think on the offensive end, offensively, this team will be better without Ellenson. Again, not saying his talent wasn't there and useful. I just think the pieces we have fit together offensively for the style we're going to play better than Ellenson did. There's tended to be a lot of deferring to Henry on the offensive end, which wasn't always a good thing.
Yeah, it's not crazy to say that sometimes when a team loses one star player, everyone else has to step up a little bit, and the team as a whole is better because of it. So I think that's maybe one of the hopes with this Marquette team. Yeah, Henry Ellenson was great, but I think, yeah, sometimes, maybe last year, especially with so many young players, it was, all right, let's just get it to the superstar and let him do something. And sometimes he did, but sometimes you needed somebody else to do something.
Right, yep.
Sometimes he needed somewhere to get rid of the ball when he was double and triple teamed, and there was just nobody there.
Right, and sometimes guys weren't getting open, and guys to not take a three.
Right. It's sometimes the ball stopped with him. And again, great player, but hopefully without him, everyone else will say, look, I got to help. I got to do my part this year. And we'll see if an alpha dog emerges, right? A guy who is you want taking the last shot, or a guy who you want the ball in his hands absolutely. I think maybe eventually Cheatham could be that guy, right? An all Big East player. I think, you know, Luke Fisher was the only Marquette player to land on a Big East preseason team. He was selected to the second team. Hopefully he can have a great year. But as far does he scream alpha dog to me? Well, I don't know. We'll see. Juwan Johnson has steadily become a very, very good player at Marquette. Who knows? Maybe he could even break through a little more and have a great senior season. So,
yeah, let's see if he – I was going to mention Juwan because he came on really strong late in the season last year. If he can continue that into this year, maybe he becomes the alpha dog, especially given that, you know, he's a senior. He's playing for his only postseason opportunity he's going to get. So, you know, maybe he's the guy that kind of stirs the drink for this team and steps up and takes ownership. We'll see. I'm excited for the season to get here.
Yeah, that is a bummer when you think about it. Like, Juwan and Dwayne Wilson have both been on the roster for 4 years. Of course, Dwayne's a redshirt junior, but they've both been on the roster for 4 years, and they have not experienced a postseason tournament, right, whether NIT or NCAA. So hopefully they get the chance to do that this year. A couple more notes. Speaking of Dwayne Wilson, before we get out of there, hopefully many of you saw this over the last week or two. Dwayne speaking up on Twitter in response to something Wisconsin's Nigel Hayes did. If you saw College Game Day at Madison 2 weeks ago, right? You know, Nigel Wilson was holding up a sign that said "Broke athlete, anything helps." And while I don't totally disagree with his opinion, seems like he was trying to get some attention for it, and Dwayne Wilson kind of came out with his take on the whole thing. So here's what Dwayne Wilson had to say on Twitter, a series of tweets. "Don't say you're broke unless your account says zero. I know people that's really out here struggling for a meal, yet a dollar. It's a shame seeing people do these stunts for social media attention. That's really corny and sad. Our generation is so unappreciative. I've got a son, and I'm a student athlete, yet I'll never complain or say I'm broke. Where I'm from, it's a blessing to even get a free education." Love that from Dwayne Wilson. Again, I see both sides of this whole paying student athletes thing. Maybe they deserve a little more. I wouldn't say maybe. They probably do deserve a little bit more than what they're getting. But just because I love Dwayne taking the opposite side of what a rival was saying, I think people in the Marquette community kind of loved what Dwayne was saying there on Twitter.
Well, and there's, I think the thing is there's, I don't know that enjoyment is the right word, but there's some sort of pleasure or positive outlook to take out of multiple levels of that, right? I mean, there's the obvious, hey, Dwayne Wilson is trolling a Badger and let's start Badger Hate Week 3 months early. Or, you know, so there's enjoyment on that level. You take it on the, well, good for you. What, you know, really appreciating the value and what he's getting out of life and recognizing that he is more fortunate than a fair number of people that either, you know, are truly broke and impoverished and or, you know, don't have the opportunities that he and his teammates have been presented with. And the third was just the level of maturity, you know, that Dwayne presented himself, because he could have trashed Nigel in a much less, I don't think professional is the way I would describe it, but he could have trashed Nigel in a much less sophisticated way. But he, you know, he was talking about Nigel without actually calling him out, and he didn't do it in a mean or nasty way. He just simply said, "Hey, this is my truth. This is what I feel." And to your point, it's not that Nigel's wrong 100%. I mean, you can argue about whether the way he goes about it is
Nigel loves being a media darling. Let's not joke about that. He loves
the spotlight.
He loves being on camera. Right. Yeah.
You know, so he, you know, his cause may be good, and again, that's the cause even can be up for debate, I suppose. But, you know, the way Nigel presents himself is much more, you know, kind of a centrally focused on him, whereas is Dwayne in that response, kind of looks much more outwardly focusing, and something I think that, you know, the Jesuit mission and the Marquette mission kind of is what we're all about. So it was good to see, you know, one of the student athletes at Marquette kind of reflecting what the overall mission of the university was, and doing so in a very positive way. So I think there was a lot to like there. And it, you know, if anything, like I even tweeted at the time, it just makes you want to like Dwayne Wilson more. I mean, just a very well stated and very appreciative of him, you know, kind of sticking up for him and his teammates in that way.
Yeah, and I think he was asked about that at Marquette's media day. I saw an interview that the kids at MUTV did. And I forget Dwayne's exact words, but he definitely said, look, I have a lot of respect for Nigel Hayes as a player. I just disagreed with his message. I think the lives we live are – these weren't his exact words, but this was the gist of it. He said the lives we live as student-athletes, it's blessed. A lot of people are much worse off than us getting a free education. You know, we get – you know, they feed us, right? You know, we have warm beds to sleep in. You know, do they deserve a little more money? And this is where I'm switching away from Dwayne's point, just going on my own. But do they deserve a little more money? Yeah, maybe so. I mean, there are millions and millions of dollars in these TV contracts and whatnot. So in that regard, I don't necessarily disagree with Nigel. But, you know, Mike DeCourcy, who's a great writer for the Sporting News, right? He and Jay Billis have been going back and forth on this thing for almost a full week now, right? And Mike... You know, Jay Billis is kind of in the neighborhood of we should pay, you know, just open it all up and pay them whatever we can afford, right? Millions,
right.
If schools can afford it. Where Mike's, he doesn't so much say we shouldn't pay them. He should say, look, it's really not that bad what they're kind of going through right now. And Mike even posted a link to Dwayne's comments. And he said the thing about Nigel is, look, if the NCAA is so terrible and mistreating you, why didn't you go pro last year?
Right. Or go to the D-League or go to Europe.
Like, basically do what Vander Blue did. Even if you're not going to be a first-round draft pick, just go get paid somewhere.
Right.
I mean, Vander went to Israel. Isn't that where he went? Like,
he
went there first.
Yeah, he went to Israel first.
He tried to get drafted. He didn't get drafted and didn't get to the D-League off the bat. You know, he was playing in, I think, Israel first and went to, like, a bunch of different teams all over Europe.
Yeah, he was in Italy for a while.
Before he landed with the D-League. But, again, I think that was the interesting thing about Nigel complaining about the NCAA. If he wants to get paid for basketball, he had an opportunity to do it. In the NBA, maybe, maybe not. But if he hated the NCAA and it's really mistreating people, I mean, he could have left if he wanted to.
Yeah, like I said, and you've said it as well, his statement isn't without merit. And you could make the argument that he's fighting for those who won't speak up, right? So he's not doing it about himself. We know to a certain extent it's about himself and being in the media spotlight. But, I mean, sure, there's reforms in the NCAA that I'd love to see, quite frankly, because one of the things that's kind of, you know, you look at the star athletes and you say, well, they're not getting their fair value in terms of what they're generating. That's true. But then you also have the non-revenue sports that are siphoning off that revenue. You know what I mean? Like, so if we're going to pay for performance, so to speak, that probably means we need to end all the non-revenue sports because all they're doing is taking money away from those athletes. And I don't think that's a consequence that people
could be a really deep discussion that we could go a full another hour on. But, you know, I wonder, let's say we were going to allow them to be paid. Where does Title IX come into play there?
Exactly.
Right? Say if we're going to hypothetically pay Nigel Hayes $500,000 a year. Does that mean we're going to play all the girls' basketball players $500,000 a year? Are we going to play all the soccer players, field hockey players, track and field? Do they all get the same amount, or is it going to be prorated? Do basketball players get more? And again, how does that affect Title IX, which dictates you have to spend the same amount on male sports as you do on female sports? And do starters get more money than bench players, right? Would a guy like, say, Luke Fisher get paid more than, Sakar Anna would get paid? Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, he's not a scholarship player, but something like that, right? A guy who gets 5 minutes a night versus a guy who gets 30 minutes a night. Would they be paid the same amount? It's a very complicated thing. I think we can get very deep. Again, we could go a whole another hour on that. But the big point I want to make here is love Dwayne Wilson.
Yep.
I love what he said. I love him just speaking his mind and say, look, our lives could be so much worse. We're getting a free education. Education is the way out of poverty. The more educated you are, the less likely you are to be truly poor. And so they're getting them off to a great start. And again, their lives could be so much worse. Do they deserve more? Maybe. That's where you side with Nigel a little bit. But just because Nigel took the – or just because Dwayne took the opposite perspective of a Badger, I think it's pretty great.
Yeah, well, and like I said, that the thing I want to reinforce is you're going to love it no matter what because Dwayne trolled a Badger, right? I mean, he could have just sent out a tweet that's like, man, Nigel's stupid, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, he could have said something childish like that, but no, he took a very professional and very well-stated opinion. You know, look, here's my perspective. I got a kid. I'm happy to have this education. I love my life here at Marquette.
Yeah, you know, so it wasn't just the trolling. It was that he trolled – I don't even know that it's fair to say he trolled him, but you know it was eloquently done, and that is.
I think the kids call it subtweeting.
Yeah, yes, you're right, subtweeting.
Right, so that's the end of our Dwayne versus Nigel debate. Maybe you have your opinions and you can tweet those at us, but it is a fun discussion, and I did certainly love it when Dwayne did.
Hey,
let's wrap up with a few recruiting notes, Phil. You know, the running joke on this podcast is every time we record one, something inevitably happens that makes it dated within 24 to 48 hours, especially in the off season. Well, in this instance, we know exactly what that's going to be, because as we are recording this on Sunday for posting late Sunday, early Monday, we know that Hassan French is going to be announcing his college choice on Monday. That would be October 24th. Now, he is down to four schools. He is down to Massachusetts, St. Louis, UNLV, and Marquette. I think the vibe around him, Phil, is that Marquette may not, even though it seems like Marquette may be the most prestigious program, and I'm saying that with limited blinders on, but of those four, but it seems like he is leaning in another direction. I'm not sure where, but it seems like there's a lot of buzz around him with regards to UMass and SLU.
Yeah. This is what, you know, the French kind of came up as, and we'll talk about the two that we missed on, but French came up as the next man up in terms of the alternatives
right.
for filling the last spot for the 2018 recruiting class.
2017, right.
Exactly. But when it was turned to French, it kind of went quiet. So I just haven't had a good vibe all the last couple of weeks that he was really that interested in Marquette. And I don't know, maybe Marquette's not that interested in him either, but you know, you would certainly think.
And who knows, as we record this, maybe he will surprise us and commit to Marquette on Monday and just blow the whole thing up. But I think it is a good point because he visited Marquette in early September, and he has visited all the other schools since then, UMass, SLU, and UNLV. And I just get a kind of a vibe that Marquette's not the favorite here. But we'll see what happens. Maybe he will surprise us and commit to Marquette on Monday, and then that would complete the recruiting class. But you mentioned the guys Marquette missed on, Phil. The last time we recorded a podcast, Xavier Tillman was the guy Marquette was really hot after. I mean, that was a big 6'9 power forward from Michigan. He, in case you missed it, he decided to stay in state. He's going to go to Michigan State. Really no shame in losing out to Tom Izzo on a Michigan kid. So he's going to stay in state, and I know Marquette really wanted him. And Marquette was after a swingman named Jordan Nwara. He's a 6'6", 6'7", a swingman from New York area, I believe, upstate New York, but he committed to Louisville. So he's off the board. Looks like the last guy that Marquette is connected with right now, at least as far as notable guys on the board that you see articles written about, is a 6'10 Australian center named Jacob Epperson. He has moved to the United States. He's attending Lalamere High School in Indiana. So that's kind of looks like where Marquette is right now as far as Epperson. If they don't get French on Monday, Epperson might be their last big target for the 2017 class for now.
Well, yeah, for now. I think, and Epperson's probably a little bit of a long shot. But
very quiet on the Epperson front. I'm not sure if he's narrowed down a list, but the only articles I've seen, he has mentioned a couple times that Marquette is actively recruiting him. He hasn't necessarily expressed a lot of mutual interest. There's no visit scheduled, but it does seem Marquette does have a lot of interest in it.
Right. You know, what I think happens is if French and or Epperson don't commit to Marquette, well, French tomorrow or Epperson before the initial signing period, I think in mid to late November, something like that.
Right, early. Yeah, I think it starts before the season.
Yeah, you're
obviously, Marquette's not going to get a commit for the early signing period. I mean, if Marquette if Marquette adds another commit to the 2017 class, he would be a spring signing.
Correct. And I have a sneaking suspicion, we talked in the last podcast, that, you know, I think it was one of these that Tillman or Nuara. Nuara, thank you. I think if you could get those, okay, you sign them, given their talent and whatnot. But I think given the roster balance and the positions and the youth, I think what you're probably looking at is taking a hard run at either a JUCO transfer or a graduate transfer or something like that come springtime.
Don't forget the midseason transfers.
That's true. There is
if you have a scholarship available, which Marquette does, I mean Wally Ellenson's scholarship has not been used at all this year, which means, you know, they could give it to someone at semester if there is somebody out there who is suddenly not happy with his situation and wants to leave at the semester. And just as Luke Fisher did a couple years ago, you would have that scholarship available for that guy to come on board and say, hey, look, we got a spot for you. You can take this scholarship for now for the rest of the season, and you know, you have to sit out till next December, but you know, you can get that guy on board. So that's something else to keep in mind if Marquette does not get French or Epperson.
Yep, that is true. That is true.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on the Marquette recruiting notes over the next few weeks. And again, who knows, there may be some other guy in the 2017 class that comes out of nowhere and is a guy Marquette's interested in. But again, we'll see if they get French on Monday. I think it would be a pleasant surprise if they do. And if not, I think the attention turns to Epperson and then kind of TBD after that, and more focus on probably the 2018 class as well and seeing what they can do there. And we'll keep an eye on the transfers.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. We've got the season to look forward to, so that'll keep us from obsessing too much about
exactly. Hard to believe how close the season is. So we're probably gonna have another podcast here in the next week or two, when we will maybe break down the schedule, go game by game, maybe make some predictions with regards to the team's record and performances of some individuals, and maybe take some scrambled questions for the next one, Phil?
I think some questions would be appropriate to see what everyone's thinking out there in the social media Marquette universe.
So, yeah, if you have any questions for our next Scrambled Eggs, you can send it to me and or Phil. Of course, I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil is MOOF23, or you can hit us up on Crack Sidewalks, at Crack Sidewalks on Twitter or on cracksidewalks.com. Ask us your questions, hashtag it Scramble Questions. If you're reading it in MU Scoop, you can throw it in there as well. We'll answer a few questions on the next podcast. We'll also, again, go game by game, and we'll see exactly what the final numbers are, Phil, because I haven't exactly gone through the schedule game by game and made an accurate prediction on how many wins Marquette gets, and yeah, we'll see where they get, because I'm cautiously optimistic that they can be in the mix for the tournament. I can't wait to see exactly how many teams in the Big East are legitimately better than they are.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the non-conference, because I think it'll just be a good indicator both of the Big East generally and Marquette specifically. I think it'll be a good balanced schedule. So we'll have to go through and see what we get.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. I mentioned the Twitter handles earlier. You can hit us up on there, Joe McCann 3, MOOF23, and Crack Sidewalks. Hit us up on Facebook. We post the podcast on there. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. On iTunes, find us there. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Phil, we'll talk to you next week, man. I'm looking forward to the season.
Yeah, getting excited. We're almost there.
All right, that'll do it. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, seashells and balloons, everyone.